This is Fight Back with Bob Fitrakis and Connie Goodell-Newton on WCRS 102.1, 98.3.
And I'm Bob Fitrakis in the studio here at 1021 East Broad Street with Araya Flynn, vegan activist. Araya, welcome to Fight Back.
Thank you, Bob. Connie. Appreciate that.
And what have you been out there agitating on behalf of?
Oh, goodness. A lot. I'm working on several things right now. One of the issues that I've been very concerned with and kind of monitoring is what's been going on with our water situation, and specifically Grand Lake St. Mary's, and what's going on there, which, I mean, most people don't really put together. I mean, I think most people who are informed about it know that it is coming from waste runoff from farms, mostly pig farming up in the area. So we're, you know, I've got wind that they've been trying to deal with the situation, and they're treating it with alum, and they're spending about $2 million to treat it with alum, which is going to fix the problem but not correct the source of the problem. So it's a temporary fix that I think they could really do better with their $2 million, frankly. But it's, you know, it's an issue that concerns me as a vegan, because it is the byproduct of livestock production, which, as you know, I am really working towards transitioning us away from.
Right. So in addition to preventing cruelty to animals, the vegan issue is also an environmental issue on a larger scale.
Absolutely. And what people don't really, I guess, make that connection with veganism is that, I mean, it is against the exploitation of animals. I mean, that's basically the fundamental of a vegan is to refrain from participating in the exploitation of animals. But beyond even the exploitation of the immediate animal of those we're using for livestock production, it's also destroying habitat for both human and non-human animals. I mean, we have the luxury of shipping in bottled water or having city-treated water or what have you, but the wildlife in the area is not so fortunate.
So one of the big ethical questions, right, of veganism is really how we treat other mammals, other living creatures on the planet, and in many ways that reflects, I think, back to how we treat other human beings.
Exactly.
That?
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly it. I mean, veganism is a political statement of nonviolence towards everyone. I mean, the entire intention of being a vegan is to live peacefully and symbiotically with your world.
Well, let me ask you the obvious questions that are often asked. How can you survive on a vegan diet?
Yeah, we get that a lot. It's really quite funny. It's unfortunate that our culture has been so marketed to that, you know, we think that protein is synonymous with animal products. And that's really such a misinformation kind of problem. Because
yeah.
It's definitely, I mean, you can get protein from anything except, I mean, virtually every food group that's out there in the plant kingdom has protein except refined oils and refined sugar. So you can get protein from any food source.
Well, and I think Americans get a lot more protein than they actually need.
Oh.
Something like 5 or 10 times the amount of protein we actually need in our diets.
You're absolutely right about that.
So, yeah. You know, we may be actually even poisoning ourselves by having too much protein in our diets.
Absolutely.
By eating animal products.
Yes, and thankfully, this information is finally getting out. There are several physicians out there that are really working hard on it. There's a new movie that has come out recently called Forks Over Knives that's really spreading this information, and the physicians championing this production is a Dr. Caldwell Esselstyn, Dr. T. Colin Campbell, Dr. Pam Popper, Dr. John McDougall, all of these physicians come from different areas. Dr. Esselstyn's from Cleveland Clinic. He's a cardiothoracic surgeon. He did a study and discovered that he was keeping alive the rest of the Cleveland Clinic, like, rejects. They basically told him, go home and plan your affairs because you're going to die and we can't do any more bypass surgeries on you. He took them, and they're still alive to this day. And that was 18 to 20 years ago. Wow. At this point. I think it's been over 20 years now. So, I mean, all of them are still alive and kicking, and they were basically told to go home and make arrangements.
So they were heart patients?
Mm-hmm.
And they,
yeah.
Did they, and they switched to a vegan diet?
Yes.
Or plant-based diet? And
yes.
Then they... Basically.
They reverse their heart disease.
Great.
So you can prevent it, you can reverse it, and it's also associated with cancer and type 1 diabetes, animal products, or, you know, if you're an infant and you're fed milk as an infant, then you're exposed to a very similar protein. The difference in human breast milk versus cow's milk is dramatically different in the hormone breakdown and composition of protein and all kinds of different things are very, very different. And so, I mean, if you think about it logically, human breast milk is, you know, going to get a child to grow, you know, maybe 10, 15 pounds in the first 6 months, a year. I'm not sure about child growth, but I know that a cow will be a full-sized cow in like 1,000 pounds in about a year. You know, on cow's milk. So, I mean, it's very different, and it has significant health implications.
Yeah, that's an interesting observation.
Yeah,
for sure.
Right. And I mean, they are. I guess the point I wanted to make is you know, what happens to those cows? People don't realize that humans are getting this cow's milk. So where did the baby go that
right.
would normally be drinking that?
And so I'm a strict vegetarian and eat eggs and dairy. What's wrong with eggs and dairy? And why be a vegan instead of a vegetarian?
Okay. Well, are you a strict vegetarian for ethical reasons?
Yes, I am.
Okay. Because not everybody's a vegetarian for the same reason.
I have many reasons for being vegetarian.
Okay. Yeah. One of them I hear frequently is Hitler was a vegetarian. And, well, perhaps not really. It's very well documented that he ate animals.
Well, yeah, he probably at least ate fish, right?
Yeah. Well, he was a big fan of sausage, too, from what I hear. But anyway, he was not vegetarian for ethical reasons was the point, and his doctor basically told him he needed to be for digestive conditions.
Okay.
But as far as I remember feeling exactly the way you did. I was a vegetarian starting off. I mean, I had eaten meat for 28 years before I went vegetarian and decided I wasn't going to eat animals anymore. And I thought, well, you know, you really don't have to worry about anything with eggs. You don't kill the chicken. With dairy, you don't kill the cow.
Seems obvious, right?
right. So, yeah, what is the big deal? Well, I got exposed to what that really meant in about 2002 when the tornadoes hit the Buckeye Egg Farm.
Mm.
I got involved with an organization named Mercy for Animals after I went out there to help with that situation, and they basically ran me off the property and said, if you don't leave, we're going to prosecute you for trespassing.
So what was going on there?
They had 8 sheds damaged in the tornado. And they put an appeal out in the newspaper saying, please come help us cope with this situation. We have 2 million birds that are stuck in these. The walls had literally been ripped off the whole building, and these cages,
wow.
These levels of cages had been exposed to the elements. They had no mechanized feeding and watering anymore.
Exposed in more ways than one.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. So
what did Mercy for Animals find out there?
Well, I mean,
I got involved with them.
Yeah.
What did you see?
Well, when I was there, I was appalled by the conditions that the animals were in. But, you know, and that was enough to make me think, well, okay, forget these people. I'm eating home, you know, the free range eggs. And then I got basically informed about that, too. So, you know, the humane eggs and the humane milk is really not, you know, free range and organic does not equal humane. And in my book, and I believe Webster's, you know, it's humane is the best that mankind has to offer, right? I mean, it's the best characteristics, the virtues that we have, the compassion. Those types of the kindness and
empathy, I think, are the characteristics that are in Webster's definition. And so when I think of respect and kindness and compassion, I don't think that it ever requires the exploitation of. So, you know, you start looking at what's going on with the calves on the you know, Snowville Creamery free-range cow range, and you find out that, hey, even they send those babies off to veal. Most people don't, that everybody's appalled by veal. Well, a lot of people, there's plenty of people who enjoy veal very much, but many people abhor veal, but they don't recognize that you're, with every glass of milk, every ice cream bar, or every cheese pizza is a veal calf. So, you know,
on
when
the
you
other side of that, right?
Yeah. So. Yeah, because they had to do something with that male. If it's female, it gets to go on the line and get exploited for the next, you know, 5, 6, 4, 5 years of its life. Because the fact is that these cows, they would live 20 years naturally if they were just, well, maybe not. I mean, predators and whatnot. But, I mean, they can live up to 20 years of lifespan. But when they're on a dairy farm producing milk and repeated pregnancies, then they break down. There's a significant amount of milk production that these animals have been bred for. It creates osteoporosis, then they become injured. It's easier to just send them off to beef, as they say, for burgers, because that's where your burgers come from, dairy cows. So you've got veal as a product, a byproduct of dairy. You've got hamburgers as a byproduct of dairy. And, I mean, when you see a lot of these animals, you start to recognize that this is a business. This isn't a sanctuary. When you go on the farm, the things that they're telling you that they're doing that are very nice, yeah, okay, the life cycle, the whole life cycle, it isn't really considered. They talk about, well, you know, you think about their life on the you know, grazing in the fields, and that's, you know, old McDonald's farm in mm-hmm. your brain, not that they do all these other things to them. And where do these people get their sources?
Right.
Okay, so these really nice humane farms out there, oftentimes ask the person who you're getting your free-range eggs from, what do they do with the boys? Because, you know, the baby male chicks.
Do they go into a grinder?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, if they're coming from a hatchery.
They basically grind them up, right?
Yeah, or they throw them in a 55-gallon drum.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's horrible. And that's the source for where most of these backyard, you know, free range mm-hmm. situations are coming from. So you're still supporting that industry, and it's I mean, there's a lot more to it. I mean, I can tell you that we have a Franken species now. I mean, these animals are not.
What's that?
They're these
animals. It's like a chicken with six wings or something. No, really, what is it? I'm
well,
sorry.
That's a term that I basically use to describe how much we've genetically modified them, because a chicken from the bird that it was in the rainforest okay. before we domesticated it would lay roughly 25 eggs a year.
Okay.
The chickens today lay 250 on average per year.
Okay.
And what that does to the chicken's infrastructure is not good. And they start osteoporotic issues. They get prolapsed oviducts. That's where they're basically their vagina collapses and festers up and bleeds and all kinds of bad things. It's horribly painful. Mm-hmm. You see pictures of it and you just, oh, it's terrible. So, yeah, there's a lot that's really wrong going on that you can't fix, even if it's on a free range yard, because they've been genetically modified, you know. So they have a very shortened lifespan because of it, and it gets really painful to watch them as they start to experience that. Even the same thing happens with turkeys when you see how much they've been genetically modified, because there's one thing to point out that often people don't understand. There's a difference between a layer hen and a broiler hen. So the layer hens are specifically bred and genetically modified to lay these 250-something eggs. And then you have your broiler hens that are specifically to grow giant breasts. And they grow so fast and rapidly. I mean, when you see the Mercy for Animals did an excellent film called Foul Play that shows the difference in the structure of these two birds and varieties and what happens to them. And they literally start collapsing after a certain period because they grow so fast their legs can't keep up with them.
Yeah.
And there's been reports even by, I mean, the meat eaters that often the meat itself does not taste natural, or it's in many ways bland, is that it doesn't seem like a normal. It is a monster. It is Frankenstein.
Yeah, it sounds pretty scary.
It is, and I think one of the scariest things that really gave me a reality check I recently read was that the FDA freely admits that America's meat supply has 500 to 600 chemicals, toxic chemicals, not on the label.
Yeah.
Whoa. And that's not just the meat. I mean, if it's in the meat, it's in the dairy. You can bet. Yeah. And that's a real problem. I know there's been studies that have been done about, like, what's going on with the Fukushima. When Chernobyl happened, a lot of that fallout came over and it landed on fields, and the cows ate the grass, and it went into the milk, and then the women started having major miscarriages from the contaminated milk from the cows grazing on that those free-range lands.
This is Fight Back with Bob Fitrakis and Connie Goodell Newton on WCRS 98.3 102.1.
And I remember right here in Ohio when I went down to Fernald to see the fake dog food place where they were building nuclear bombs, and there was, you know, 20 to 40 feet of radiation.
Huh.
The thing that I was most shocked is there was the parking lot where they'd stored a lot of radiation in barrels that rusted out, you know, during the heroic days of radiation. But the more amazing thing is right on the other side of the fence were cows grazing. And I'm thinking, how does this not, these contaminants get into the food supply, particularly milk, you know, the kind of fat soluble issues where you're most prone to store that. And then often it's dismissed, but...
See, that seems like common sense, but I'm sure there are people out there, the skeptics, will say, it hasn't been scientifically proven that those cows across the parking lot from the nuclear waste dump are in any way contaminated.
Right.
Right.
You just took out 20 to 40 feet of topsoil and buried it under containment, but the cows didn't pick any up. But and I'm sure you're familiar with Meet the Truth, the documentary.
Yes.
And a lot of people will dismiss that. And in fact, you know, Rush Limbaugh, who we're not fans of, mentioned the report from the UN, and he was dismissed often by the liberals in the country. But the UN did report that there's more greenhouse gases emitted from the transportation, and particularly the farming, the industrial farming of meat, than there is from all transportation in the United States through automobiles and trucks.
You are absolutely right about that. And I've heard a really fabulous analogy for it. And basically to kind of show that we've been focusing on the wrong issues when we're looking at how to curb our greenhouse gas emissions. And it was said that a vegan in a Hummer does more for the environment than a non-vegan on a bicycle because of how aggregately worse livestock production is compared to the whole entire transportation, mass transit for the world. I mean,
and that came out of the United Nations agency. But also in that film, I mean, the thing that struck me is here you had like three or so people in parliament in the Netherlands, and their entire party was based on mercy for animals.
Yeah.
Was based on animal rights.
Good point. And you know, we have a movement similar going on right here in America, because they have the Party for the Animals, and we just established the Humane Party. So there is a new political party that is actually focused on compassion being like the center of policymaking.
And I know you've been doing some poetry lately. Is there anything you wish to share with the listeners?
Well, thank you. Actually, I did just for the first time write a poem. It was part of an eco poetry workshop at ComFest.
Great, cool.
Yeah, and I had never done it before, and so I can't say that this is all by myself, because I had help, to be sure, by the people running the workshop and some editing by Suzanne Moeller. And but I wrote one because I was really feeling... I had been thinking about pig farming and what that was doing. And I read a really compelling article once by Rolling Stone magazine called Boss Hog, America's Worst Polluter is Smithfield Farms. And he talked about the situation out there. It was by Jeff Teets or something to that effect. But he talked about the factory farming out there and what it's doing to South Carolina. And one of the things that really stuck in my mind and the pictures that they showed in that article were the aerial photos as they flew over the farms. And they were no longer Well, they have these lagoons. They call them lagoons. It's another euphemism that, that the industry likes to use instead of calling it a cesspool for what it really is, right? And it, he described it as Pepto-Bismol pink. And I was like, oh, that's disgusting. And I mean, when you see the photos, it literally
it
is,
really is
Pepto-Bismol pink. So it's a pink lagoon.
Jeez.
So I wanted to convey this to people. And so I wrote a poem called The Pink Lagoon.
Or the creature from the Pink Lagoon.
Yeah, there might be some funkiness coming out of there that might resemble the creature. But did you want me to read the poem?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Well, here goes. The slime, it doesn't go away. It lingers into more generations. It was once a place of peace and beauty. Now nothing survives the Pepto-Bismol pit. Bit by bit by bit, they all succumb. Searing nostrils, burning lungs, all from the preference of human tongues. These pink lives, lovely, soft, brilliant, and shy, sparkle in the sun and recognize their young. Their gentle eyes now broken, their innocence plundered. There are no dragonflies in this lagoon. There are no frogs in this lagoon. There are no birds in this lagoon. There is no life in this lagoon.
Cool.
Kind of sums it up. And as a man who raised two pot-bellied pigs, Suzanne, my wife, we know the joy of hanging out with pigs and how brilliant they are. Our pigs, of course, like any pig parents, we thought they were geniuses. Iggy was raised on NPR, so I'm absolutely sure he was the most literate pig in modern times.
I heard he even spoke English.
Yeah, he understood English. I absolutely believe, you know, he and EO used to open the refrigerator with his snout when he needed something to eat. And he knocked the phone off the hook if I was on the phone too long and oink into it.
How cute.
Yeah, so it's like, it's amazing, you know, unless you've really been around, you know, pigs or other animals, you don't realize how incredibly intelligent and sensitive they are and how much they bond with you.
Well, I think, you know, a lot of times that people really have to dehumanize the animals that they eat in order to be able to deal with it emotionally.
Absolutely. And so do those who are working in the industry around them.
Yeah.
I mean, if you think about it, they have a job to do.
Yeah.
This is not a sanctuary. They have schedules to keep. They have expectations of how much production they want out of these animals. And if they're not producing, they pitch them in a dead pile and get someone or another individual who will.
Yeah.
So it's very heartless, and they're so around all of this all the time. And who really wants to do these jobs? These aren't your most developed people who have a lot of patience. And you know, my experience of meeting a lot of people working in these situations, they generally hate these animals. They hate the fact that they're dealing with animals that don't want to cooperate with them, and so they're abusive with them.
Yeah.
And I mean, I've had farmers tell me that, hey, you know. You know you can't go in and you can't beat the wife and you can't beat the kids. So you go out and you beat the animals.
Wow.
Who's going to care?
Yeah.
Who's going to say anything?
Yeah, and, you know, in the law, we have some animal cruelty laws, but that seems to apply mostly to pets. So the laws that apply to people's pets and to wild animals are different than what apply to farm animals.
Right.
And why make that distinction? Yeah, we couldn't really... People couldn't bear to think about eating their pets, their companion animals, but what is really that different about a pig that you eat and a pig that you have for a pet? You don't know it. That's the difference. You don't know the pig that you eat.
Right.
In most cases. So.
Exactly.
We've gotten away from the family farms where people raise their own food and have to kill it to eat it.
There's some really compelling information out there about this as well. A woman by the name of Melanie Joy did her PhD program, dissertation, I believe, on studies on our attitudes towards animals in this differentiation, and she coined a term called carnism. And it's basically that we're raised in a culture here because there's other cultures, such as the Jains, who don't believe in using animals at all. And they've been around for centuries. But in our culture, we're told day in, day out, eat beef.
It's what's for dinner, right?
Yeah, beef, it's what's for dinner. If it ain't eggs, it ain't breakfast. Milk, it's the perfect food. And yeah. I say, yeah, for baby calves, not for humans. So.
Well, I mean, what I've always found interesting is when an animal actually escapes, cows, an occasional pig, mm-hmm. breaks out of the, you know, industrial, slaughter system, people rejoice. So it seems like on some basic level, I used to always think about the pig holocaust. There's this massive holocaust going down. And usually it's, you know, people will be fighting for the unborn baby holocaust. But, you know,
the KFC chicken genocide?
I'm always hoping that one day they'll be down at Bob Evans chaining themselves to the door and saying, you know, it's wrong to eat swine. It's in the book of Leviticus. We're warned against eating them and trying to stop this holocaust. But people seem to want animals to be free. But they appear to be able to compartmentalize it.
That you're absolutely right. 95% of the people, there's a survey that was done, say they love animals and don't want them to be hurt or killed unnecessarily, yet 95% of the population continues to participate in hurting and killing animals unnecessarily so they can eat them.
Right. Well, it seems like education would really go a long way to getting people to match their behavior to their desires and their ethics.
You would think, but boy, people don't want to learn this one. I get a lot of hostility and a lot of rigorous defensiveness about this issue when you try to bring it to them. They don't want that. They feel like you're preaching.
Well,
so it's really.
Besides
creative education.
Yeah, there's the individual level, and there's also, like, the institutional level. You mm-hmm. know, we have factory farms. Those are huge institutions that really promote this, make a lot of money off of
it,
and advertise it. Advertise it as something that's not cruel. You know, you have pictures of animals that are dancing around, cartoons of animals who, like, want to be eaten.
Right.
Like, you know, the...
Yeah, that's why I really like to... As terrible as this might be to some people, talk about the euphemisms. You know, for me, when you really sit back and you think about the euphemisms that we've adopted in this culture to make things that are very unpleasant, very palatable, I mean, what is meat? It's the dead carcass of someone who wanted to live.
It's a corpse, yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, when you start actually calling things for what they are, then people think you're rude. You know, because you're bringing this thing that they don't want to be confronted with yep. to the forefront.
You're just being mean and inflammatory and...
Precisely.
Starting something with them.
Yeah.
Well, that calls into question the famous essay by Orwell, Politics in the English Language, when he pointed out that you go in and machine gun a village, burn the huts to the ground, arrest all the men, destroy the crops... And then you call it pacification. You use the term for peace. So in this case, you're referring to protein. You're referring to better bones and muscles. And you're not really looking at the actual practice. Or there's another thing that says, oh, you know, what am I going to do at Thanksgiving? Eat tofurkey? What do you say to that?
Yum. Yes. Yeah, there's an amazing tofurkey out there.
Yeah, and I love tofurkey.
Yeah, some field roast thing, too.
Part of a healthy diet.
Mm-hmm. Much healthier than that 500 to 600 chemical-laden meat that you're probably getting from the conventional market.
All the hormones and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
All right, we got a minute left here. Anything else you want to tell the listeners?
Love life, live vegan.
All right. Thanks a lot for being here, Araya.
Thank you. This is...
And thank you for having me.
This is Fight Back with Bob Fitrakis and Connie Goodell-Newton on WCRS 98.3 102.1.